Hey, God, man, I am so excited to be here today. I am so excited that you are here today. I actually, last week during the 11:15, I sat right back there. And so when the video came on and I said, I'm not here today, everyone around me looked at me like I was a liar. Because I was. But it was just so awesome to be able to sit in here. And like, I get it why people come to church. Like, I could sing. I could worship with people. I high-fived strangers. I listened to an amazing message. I was like, oh, I should come back more often and just sit back there and not here. But I gotta tell you, man, I have like, so this is what happens is when I don't preach a week, then all the energy from the previous week needs to come out this week as well, okay? So you're in for it today, just so you have that heads up. Oh, there we go, some response. So that's going to be like our 2019 goal as a church resolution. We're actually going to respond when I say, hey, look at us. New habits, new behaviors. There we go. Hey, I do want to say, so today we are starting this new series, Come Alive. And we'll get into it in just a second. But this series, one of the most important things that it's going to do, it is going to lay a foundation for the launch of our Celebrate Recovery Ministry in February. Let's celebrate that for 1 second, because that is such an important thing that's happening. And so I just want to say on the front end, man, if you are interested in attending and getting help and being involved in serving through this, you can sign up at the iPads out there. If something happens throughout service, whether it's a lyric, a story, something said in the message just goes, oh, I need to be a part of that, or I need to know more about that, you can sign up back there. Or the other thing you can do is you can find one of these people with a Celebrate Recovery shirt on and just ask them questions. We have Lisa Howard right there. She's got her shirt on. Lisa, stand up. Someone get a camera on Lisa and her shirt. So there you go. So that's how you know what the shirt looks like. And so just to be a part of that. So today we start this new series, Come Alive. And this is typically, I typically give you a scripture reference and we walk through it. But I need to just like take a couple seconds and explain what we're doing today, because we're going to do something a little different. And if you don't care about like the information here, just check out for 60 seconds. That's fine. I'm not offended, okay? But I just want to explain, because I take very carefully and very seriously getting the opportunity to open up the Word of God every single week and to just show you, hey, what God is showing me, what I'm struggling with, and where I feel like God is leading us. And I always want to make it in such a way that when you leave here, not just that it sticks with you and that you've got something to think about or something to act on, but that you know where it came from. Does that make sense? Like, I've sat in sermons before, and I've thought, wow, that was amazing. I have no idea how that is connected to the passage that we talked about, but it was really good. And I don't want you to do that. I want you to know how these are connected. So let me just explain something for a second. The Bible in your row, and the one that we look at every week, is a translation of Scripture. The one in your row is the New Living Translation. The Bible was not originally written in English, nor was Jesus an American. Important things to just continuously be aware of. And so what we have is we have from the original language, we have different translations for different purposes. So the New Living Translation, the one that we use every week, is meant to be really, really accessible. And so there's a couple things. For one, it is written at a fourth grade reading level, which is kind of why we have it. We go, hey, we want to make sure no matter where you are that you can kind of track along and follow what's happening. The other thing is it is translated not literally, but it's called thought for thought. And so it goes through the sense of like, it's not, oh, this word means this, this word means that. It is, hey, this is what the writer was attempting to communicate through this idea. This is what they mean for us today. Kind of like some of you have your spouses do that for you all the time, where it's like, what they meant to say was this. Just me? Okay. So that is why we use the New Living Translation. But there are some times that when we get into the essence of what the original writers are saying, that the New Living Translation does not help us. And so today I'm going to read out of the English Standard Version, the ESV, and that is what's going to be on the screens. You can follow along if you want to go there at bcnazarene.org/gatherings. In the English Standard Version, it is written at a 12th grade reading level, and it's also, somebody went, I didn't mean for that to be that intimate. At a 12th grade reading level. Oh, no. I gotta get back. There you go. So it's written at a 12th grade reading level, but it's also written word for word. So we get, hey, this is what the original text actually said, not just the thought communicated. So this is what I want to do today. And this is kind of the take on what's a little different is we're going to look not at one passage. We're going to look at two passages of Scripture. And the two passages of Scripture that we're going to look at are the same account by different writers. So we have four accounts of the life of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Each of them were written for a different purpose, and each of them have unique details that they share as part of their account. Kind of like in a similar way that if you and your spouse or friend or whoever else were to witness something or experience something, you would come back and you would tell the same account, but you would tell it differently, right? Some of you, like, if you're married, like, you and your spouse tell stories the exact same way, or do you tell stories like, no, you're forgetting this. No, she was there before he was there. Sorry. This is all coming out from the previous week. I apologize. And so they all tell them in their each unique, different way. And so this is what we're going to do. This is going to be kind of fun. Do you ever do those things that, like, I remember the book that I had when I was a kid, it was Highlights for Children, where it was like the thing, it was like the, hey, find eight differences between this picture and this picture. Anyone ever do that? Anyone ever said, like, I don't care about the differences, I'm flipping to the back and looking for where they're circled and then highlighting them in my book? That was me. I didn't care. I was like, done, finished. So this is what I want to do. I want to show you these two different accounts, and I want you to look for the difference. Because there's one key thing. You'll notice some obvious ones on the surface in terms of length, but there is one key difference that makes all the difference in the world between these two passages. So we're going to start with Matthew chapter 8, starting in verse 1. It says this, when he being Jesus, came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. That's like lots of people, that's like quantity, not quality, okay? That's not like great crowd. No, there's a lot of people. Great crowds followed him, and behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a proof to them. Quick note, just to make sure we're aware of what's going on. If you had leprosy in this day and age, you were designated as unclean. You could not be in contact with anyone who did not have leprosy, who was designated as clean. In order to go from a position in which you were designated as having leprosy, then to re-enter the community, you had to go to the priest and he would verify that you no longer had leprosy. It's kind of like if someone has the stomach bug, they stay in their room, okay? That is the same thing that's happening here, except you don't have to go to the priest, you have to go to your mom in our day and age. So that's Matthew chapter 8. I want to show you the same account in Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5, verse 12. It says, while he was in one of the cities, there came a man full of leprosy, and when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and begged him, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him. And he charged him to tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing as Moses commanded for a proof to them. But now even more the report about him went abroad, and great crowds gathered to hear him and to be healed of their infirmities. But he would withdraw to desolate places and pray. You see the difference? While the Luke account goes further, goes more extended into stuff that the Matthew account doesn't, there is one really, really important difference that happens at the beginning of this passage. You see, we see some distinctions. Luke is a doctor. He is a first century medical doctor, which, I mean, it is amazing that someone could read his handwriting clear enough to still making bad jokes in 2019, just so you know, didn't make that resolution. And so Luke is a doctor, and so he has a unique account. Matthew is writing to a Jewish audience. Matthew has this background, and so he's writing to people who were Jewish to help them understand that Jesus is the one who was sent from God. And so for Matthew, he would have been familiar with Jewish law and these designations of clean and unclean. And so when Matthew identifies this man coming in, it says, when he came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him, verse 2, and behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. This is what happened. A leper came. That's who it was. Of course, it was a leper. That's how people would have identified them in Matthew's crowds. Those are the lepers. The lepers stay over there. But Luke does something really significant. You see, Luke is a doctor. And so Luke understands something that Matthew doesn't. While Matthew has that clear designation, he is a leper. This is how Luke writes down the same account, verse 12. While he was in one of the cities, there came a man full of leprosy. Matthew says he's a leper. Luke says he's a man. He's full of leprosy, but he's a man. And while we might question Luke's bedside manner, as a doctor, like, did he have to say full of leprosy? Did he say he had leprosy? Like, this is the doctor. Is like, how's it look, doc? Not good. What are my chances? Oh, real bad, real bad. He's full of leprosy. But he makes this, so important distinction. He's a man full of leprosy. You see, for Matthew, while he gives this man a label, and Matthew comes in and he goes, who is it? It's the leper. He gives this man a clear label. Luke does something so important. He gives him a diagnosis. He says, no, it's not his label. It's not who he is. It's what he's struggling with. No, it doesn't identify him. It's not the sum of who he is. His illness, his sickness, his disease is not the totality of who he is as a person. Matthew goes, he's a leper, and Luke goes, no, he's a man full of leprosy. He gives him a diagnosis instead of a label. For those of you who are note takers, the title of the message today is Label Maker. Label Maker. And I think it's really easy for us at different spots in our lives to give labels. Because if I'm going to give someone else a label, I don't need any context. I don't need any background. I don't need to know their story. I can just identify, this is who you are. This is exactly what you struggle with. This is the totality of who you are as a person. When I was in middle school, there was a guy who was in my gym class. And in seventh grade, we had to go through this physical fitness testing, all this other stuff. You probably did this at some point in time. You had to run the mile. You had to do pull-ups for a brief period of time. My younger sister held the pull-up record at my school. That was cool, but it was a little embarrassing at the same time. Just it was like, hey, isn't that your sister? Yeah. Where's your name? Not up there. And so we had these different tests, and one of the guys who was in my gym class, he had set the school record in seventh grade for the shuttle run. Now, in the shuttle run, you just, like, did it in the gym. You had to run, like, 20 yards, grab a block, run it back, put it down, run another 20 yards, grab another block, go and put it down, and they time you. And so in seventh grade, he had set a school record for the shuttle run, and so he was the fastest kid in the school. That's how we know it. He was the fastest kid in the school. Between seventh and eighth grade, he started smoking. And so eighth grade shuttle run came around. He didn't do so well. In fact, while in front of the football coach, who was our PE teacher, and I assume it's just every PE teacher in the entire world, he takes off and he immediately starts coughing. Like, before he even gets to the first block, he immediately starts coughing. He picks up the block. He was at least courteous about it. He didn't just cough open, and he didn't cough into his hand, into the elbow. He was sanitary about the way in which he coughed. But, like, the entire time running back and forth, he coughed the entire time. And we did that thing that people think is really humorous, but is just really dumb at the core, where we, like, coughed and shouted out, smoker. We never do that. You act like you're concealing it. You're like, smoker. We thought it was so funny. But it was fascinating to go, seventh grade, he was known as the fastest kid in the school. Eighth grade, smoker. That's who he was. That was his label. And it's easy for us in our lives to attach labels to different situations. You didn't fail, you're a failure. You didn't lose, you're a loser. You do not currently not have a job, you are unemployed. In situations that are complex, situations that have problems, all of a sudden become the label that's attached to us. And it can happen not just in a negative way, it can happen honestly in a positive way too. Like, you could be known as, like, from your parents, from someone else, like, you are successful. That is who you are. You are successful. Or you are strong. That is how you, I know I am strong. I don't struggle with that stuff. I am strong. Or this is one of the biggest ones heaped on people in our society. One of the, like, highest levels of admiration. You are self-made. You didn't need anyone else's help to get to where you are. You are self-made. You're a self-made man, or you're a self-made woman. You didn't have anyone prop you up. You are self-made. And this becomes the problem, is that as we get labeled more and more, we fear pursuing a diagnosis. As those labels become further attached to us, we no longer pursue help for our problems. And we view this usually just in a negative way. We view it as like, we need to understand you're not a failure, you just failed in this moment. You're not a loser, you just lost in this. And so there's a path forward. But I actually think, honestly, in some ways, the more dangerous aspect of this is in the positive way. Because if you have attached your identity, if you have attached your emotions and attached your confidence to, say, the label of, I am successful, then how do you deal with a setback? Like, if that becomes who you are, you mean, no, I am successful at the core. That's what gives me value. That's what gives me meaning. Then as soon as you're not, it feels like you've lost part of yourself. Or how do you, if you are self-made, how do you ask for help? Because I can't ask for help. Like, if I have a struggle, if I have a problem, if I need someone to lift me up in some way, I would love to. And someone come along and go, hey, I'll show you how to do this. You're in a tough spot. I'll show you how to navigate this situation. No, I can't. I can't accept your help. I am self-made. And we do what Matthew did to this man. Leper. That's who he is. And we need to understand it's not a label. It's a diagnosis. I don't need other labels, because what we're going to see in a second is we have already been labeled. I need a diagnosis that I have problems, but I am not my problems. I have issues, but I am not my issues. Let me show you an example of how hard this is. We need lots of participation. Who would say I have a problem? Who would say? Raise a hand. Who would say I have a problem? All right, put your hands down, please. Who would say, full participation, I'm not perfect? Who would say I'm not perfect? Go ahead, keep them up for just a second, anyone. Check the narcissists around you just to be sure. There you go, we're good. Single people are checking out who not to date. Nope, no thank you. Nope, I'm good. Here's the thing that's fascinating. It's hands up, I'm not perfect. But then when I ask the original question, less hands up on I have a problem. Isn't that the exact same thing? Like, if I'm saying I'm not perfect, aren't I admitting in that same moment it means I have a problem? Are you perfect? No. Do you have problems? No. That means you're perfect. And so we go in here, yeah, I'm not perfect, but who has a problem? Nope, not me, I'm good. So we're gonna do something a little fun, okay? You ready? Turn to someone around you. Look them dead in the face. Right in the eyes. This is going to feel really good. Some of you have been waiting years for this. Okay? Look him right in the face and say, you have issues. Some of you, that was a simple sentence. I don't know what we're still talking about at this point in time. But here's the thing. Look him right back in the face. Okay? Look him right back in the face and tell him this. But you are not your issues. Now look to the person on the other side of you. Find someone else around you. Or you can go back to the same person just for fun. And I mean this as a humorous piece, but honestly, I mean this as healing. Turn to someone around you and say this. Say, I have issues. And then say this, but I am not my issues. See, this is what I want you to understand, is we must begin to make the distinction between the symptom and the substance. And we make them the same. We make it like, oh, you have this problem. This means that you are this problem. That is not the case. There is a difference between the symptom and the substance. When my kids go outside to play and they come in, they are dirty. They are. But they are not dirt. And there is a difference. Because they are dirty, when they come in, I can wash them off and I don't eliminate my children. Like, they are still there. Now, honestly, I say that as one time I asked my kids to go out and help clean up the outside, and they assumed that I was not talking about their toys. They assumed I was talking about the dirt. Guys, that's not gonna work. Like, you can't clean up the dirt. You can't make the dirt less dirty. It's what it is. But you are not dirt. You are just dirty in this moment. And what we do is we take these labels that we have been called or assigned to us, and we make them a matter of identity. We make them who we are in the moment, and they are not that. That is absolutely not the case. Let me show you this. This is what Scripture says on this. If we look at Luke chapter 5, verse 12, it says this of the man. It says, he asked Jesus, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. He's saying, I need you to change my identity. He says, yeah, I will be clean. But the distinction is so important that what Jesus is doing in this moment that we often don't understand is he's not, ready for this, he's not transforming him. He's renewing him. And sometimes we get this language so far off in church is we'll say, God, like, I need God to completely change my life. You may, like, your life may be bad, and you go, I need God to completely change my life. But what I want you to see is you don't need God to completely change you. You need him to renew you. But you don't need him to completely change you. This is how I know this. If we would go back in the book of Genesis, and we would walk through the creation account. I'm going to ask for your help on this. We look at first day of creation. It says, hey, God created the expanse, created the heavens and the earth. And it says that God looked at creation. And do you remember what it says? That God looked at creation and he said that it was good. And we look at the second day of creation, which I can't exactly remember what happened on there. Something really important. And the third day, and sun, moon, and stars, and the expanse between the skies and the earth, and the separation between the water and the land, and the animals, and the vegetation. Then we get to the sixth day of creation, and we see that God created male and female. Male and female, he created them. And he didn't, at the end of the sixth day of creation, go, and that needs some work. No, what'd he say? He looked at male and female, and he looked at his creation, and he said that it was, you know. And so this is what I want you to see. You are good. Like, that is how you were created. You were created good. And your life may have become a mess over time, and you may have significant struggles over time, and you may have problems, but you are not your problems. You may have issues that you're dealing with, but you have not become your issues because God said that you were created good. And here's the beauty of that. You can't change that. Like, you can't screw that up. You can't go, well, God created me good, but now I'm bad. No, you don't have that ability. You cannot change the label that has already been put on your life because you are God's. You are his. And he gets to decide the label that is upon you. So let me show you this. Let's have some fun with this. Anyone at home have one of these? Anyone super type A, OCD organized and has this everywhere? Let me make this thing work. Hang on. I haven't used one of these for a long time. Ooh, it's printing. Ooh, it comes out the side. Hang on. It's got a sticker. You know, for the time that I'm putting on this, you would think the illustration would be better. It says table. Let me show this. You got the camera really show. So we put labels on the microphones, just so we know which microphone was one. And then one week I picked up the wrong microphone, and I went back and told the production team. I was like, guys, I won't do it again. Like, I promise you, I won't do it again. And apparently they have such faith and confidence in me that, can you get the camera? I'll try to be really still right here. You see what my microphone says? It says Kevin. Because that's how much confidence they have in me to not pick up the wrong microphone. Kevin. Okay, that's mine. So a couple years ago. Oh, it says Cutter Air. I'll turn it off. So a couple years ago, we had one of these laying around our house, and my kids got a hold of it. Yeah. And so they started labeling everything. And at first, it was, like, really cute. At first, they, like, have a label, and I'd, like, pick up a pencil. I was like, what is sticky on it? Oh, they put a pencil label, as if we as a family didn't know that this was a pencil outside the label. And, like, all these other things, like, kept popping up with labels, like, remote. Dog. That was my favorite one, as if we didn't know that was the dog. And then I had to put a stop to it because they realized that they couldn't just label it as things. They couldn't just, like, describe the thing that it was. They could claim it. And so they started putting their names on stuff, which was humorous at first until my stuff started popping up with my kids' names on it. I pick up my phone. It says Maddie on the back. Hey, come here. Why does this say Maddie? It's mine. No, it's not. And you'll see this out of two sides. This is so important. Just because you relabeled it doesn't mean you changed ownership. Just because you slapped your label on top of it doesn't mean you're changing possession of whose it is. This is mine. Like, this is my phone. I purchased this. And here's the same thing with you. Just because someone else labeled you, just because someone else slapped a name on top of you, just because someone else gave you a designation doesn't change ownership, doesn't change the label that is at the core of who you are. You are his. Like, you are his. He created you. He is the one who formed you. Let me show you. This is what God says about your label. This is from various parts of Scripture. God says this, that you are good, that you are his, that you are no longer a slave. You're no longer a slave to the habits, the patterns, and the struggles that you have in your life. You are set free. You are accepted. You are a new creation. You are an heir. You are chosen. You are forgiven. That's what Lisa said in her story. She said, when I understood and began to entertain the thought in the bottom of my heart that I was forgiven is when everything changed. You are forgiven. You are redeemed. You are made alive. You are a citizen of heaven, and you are made complete in him. Could we celebrate that for just a second as a church right now? And it's this understanding, I have been labeled. And so even if someone else gives a label to me, it doesn't change the label that has already been put on my life. And that is what this man understood. He understood that. See, at the core, let me show you this in Luke chapter 5, verse 12. This is how Luke describes him. It says, there came a man full of leprosy. What do we know about a man? God created the man, and it was? Absolutely. And so what he is saying right here in this moment, he says, this man is good, but he's got a problem. He's full of leprosy. And so this man does two things that are so important. I'm going to show you this from the Matthew passage because he says it so clear here. I want to show you the two things that this man does. It says first, chapter 8, verse 1, when he came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. Verse 2, and behold, a leper came to him. Now, this was forbidden in their culture. The leper had to stay out on their outskirts, but the leper came to Jesus. Why? Because he knew he had a problem. The leper was willing to admit need. He was willing to say, I have a problem. I am not my problem, and I no longer want to live within my problem. I'm willing to admit that I have a need. This is the hardest thing for some of us. I hate going to a store and asking for help. I would wander around Walmart until they assumed I was stealing something before I would ask for help. And my wife is the opposite. Like, if I just look momentarily confused, which to be fair is the majority of my life, she'll immediately ask someone for help. She's like, yeah, my husband has a question. I'm fine. No, what are you looking for? She'll find it for you. I'm looking for this. I hate it. I don't like it. I don't like admitting need. But here's the thing, that until I'm willing to admit that there's a problem, I'm stuck in my problem. Now, I am not my problem, but until I'm willing to admit that I have a problem, I can't move past my problem. This is how we say it as a staff. We'll talk about this in terms of a leadership principle. We'll say it like this. The issue is not the issue until the leader doesn't solve the issue. Then the leader is the issue. That make sense? Like, hey, here's the deal. If there's a problem, like, let's focus on the problem until the leader in place doesn't solve the problem, then who's the problem? The problem is the leader. They say, hey, we have to identify what the real problem is and to move forward. So this past summer, I had mono, which I understand that coupled with my love of chicken nuggets fully puts me as a middle schooler in a grown man's body. So, yeah, it was good. And so I went to the urgent care because I've been sick for like a week. And I just felt awful. And so I'm going into the urgent care and I'm telling them my symptoms. I'm telling them like what was going on. I'm like, yeah, I just feel bad. I've got no energy. I sweat constantly. Like, look at this, is gross. I didn't actually do that. I was like, I just feel terrible. And so they said, okay, let's take some blood work. And then they called me like 30 minutes later and said, hey, we drew your blood in the wrong vial, which just gave me so much confidence in my medical care that I was receiving in that moment. And so I go back in and let them take my blood again, and they test my blood, and it came back in. They're just like, yeah, you don't have strep, you don't have the flu, we got no idea what's going on. Why don't you give it a couple days? I've been sick for a week. I was like, no. Like, there's something wrong. You telling me you don't know what's wrong doesn't mean there's nothing wrong. Hear that for yourself. You confessing to yourself that there's nothing wrong doesn't mean that there's nothing wrong, right? Like, we understand that. If your life is chaotic, it is not life. It may be you that's chaotic within there. And so that could be the problem. And so I went back in there and I was like, no, it's not okay for you to tell me that there's nothing wrong. And so I went a little later. Another doctor was there. And she goes, I don't think it's going to happen because you're a grown man. And I was like, yes, I am. And this doesn't usually happen, but I think you have mono. I was like, do you know what mono is? I was like, yeah, it's what all the guys in middle school who had girlfriends got that I never did. Thank you for the sympathy within there. I appreciate that. And so they went and tested me and come back and like, yeah, you've got mono. I was like, so what do? They go, go take a nap for like 3 weeks. Awesome. But here was the thing that happened within there is when I was in that state and they didn't know what was wrong, I was no better for it. But when I could admit I have a problem and I need to figure out the problem, all of a sudden I could move forward within there. To be able to go in that moment, say like, hey, it doesn't matter what label has been ascribed to me, that doesn't mean I don't have need. That doesn't mean there aren't areas of my life that need to be worked out. That doesn't mean that there's not parts of my life that I need renewed, that I need restored. So this man, first off, he is willing to admit need, but then he does something. Oh, this is so important. Matthew chapter 8, verse 2. It says, a leper came to him, and then this is what he does, and knelt before him And that's kind of a weird posture for us today, because my guess is like none of you this morning ever knelt before anyone. Accurate? Yeah, because it's not super common. We don't kneel before someone. Because this is what we understand. This is what we think. We're all on the same level. And we are. We have equal value. We are all equally created. We're all on the same level. But this is my fear, is that we have taken that understanding that we're all equal, we're all on the same plane, and we've ascribed it to God. And like, if you're with us Christmas Eve, we focused on the fact that like Emmanuel means God is with us, which is so important to understand. God is with us. But because God is with us does not mean that God is the same as us. That makes sense? Those are different. Because God is with you at all times constantly does not mean that God is the same as you, because he's not. And so let me say it like this. It is important to understand that God is above you, that God is stronger than you, that God is more powerful than you are. Like, if I'm in a pit, like I am stuck in a pit, it does me no good to have someone else in the pit with me. I need someone above who can help pull me out. And like, while we're in the pit together, we may have community, like we may have some togetherness in there, but we don't have recovery. I need someone stronger than me to pull me out of the pit. Like, if we were to get together and we were to talk about like struggles with raising children and our problems with raising children, and you shared with me that every kid that you had ever been in contact with, your own and others, every kid that you have been in contact with have been expelled and thrown in prison and committed homicide. Let me say it like this. We may have some laughs at some stories, but I'm not taking your advice. I'm not going to that extent, because when you have someone with you, you can have community, but you need a power stronger than you in order to have recovery, in order to move forward. And so this man does something so important. He not only admits his need, but he is willing to get help. He is willing to go to the right place, to the proper source of strength in order to get help. If you have a problem, going to your friends who can't work out of the exact same problem may not be your best move. That makes sense? Like circling around the same struggle may not be the best strategy for your life with people who are stuck in the same spot. Now that community matters, but you need help from a source that is stronger than you. You need help from someone who feels what you feel, but has not succumbed to the same pressures and struggles that you have. I am almost out of time. We have to look at another verse. So I need some help. Band, get up here, because we're going to sing at the end. So you're my help. Go ahead. Now's the time. Look at them coming out just like that. That's fantastic. I want to show you this. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15 and 16. I said one verse. This is actually true. Two. Says this, this high priest, referring to Jesus, this high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, and he faced all of the same testings we do. What's he saying right there in that moment? He's saying, hey, Jesus has faced every struggle you have. Jesus has been through every temptation, every problem that you could have faced. He knows what you have been through. And yet, while he has faced all of the same testings, he did not sin. He did not succumb to it. And then in verse 16, it says this, so let us come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. There we will receive his mercy, and we will find grace to help us when we need it most. Can we celebrate that for just a second? Because that is good news. It says right here, this is how you are to understand your posture. You have a problem, but you are not your problem. You have issues, but you are not your issues. And you can sit your life convincing yourself that you do not have problems, that you are not perfect, but don't actually have real struggles. Or you can admit need and get help. You can boldly approach the throne, not of judgment, boldly approach the throne, not of condemnation, but boldly approach the throne of grace. The throne of grace. Because this is what Jesus is promising, is that while you have a struggle, he will help you through that. I want to invite you right now, if you would, stand to your feet. Stand to your feet right now, please, in this moment. This is what I want you to see. If you miss everything else, please take hold of this. You have already been labeled. You have already been labeled. And it doesn't matter what you have been through. It doesn't matter what you have done. It doesn't matter what you are stuck in. You were created good. God claimed that you were created good. And because of that, you can go to him for help. We sung this just a minute ago. We sung, the Lord is in this place. The Lord is in this place. And so it's to understand, my help comes from the Lord. My help comes from God. And so he is the one that I'm going to turn to. Make this the year that you do not sit in your problems. Make this the year that you don't convince yourself that you don't have any, but you go to the one who can help you. You go to the one who is on high, who can lead you from that. Let's celebrate this together as a church.